I will call to order the House Committee on Healthcare. Thank our able staff for getting us right on time. And we're going to still look for the blue light, right? Is that the... Okay. I got calls for calling. Somebody, the blue light wasn't on. They said they were using an auxiliary system. Okay, I will open an informational meeting on House Bill, well, on the Governor's Health Fund Board Report, a continuation from where we hoped we would have been on Monday, I guess. Is that right? Monday, and then we'll also, I guess at the same time, open an informational hearing on House Bill 2009, so we have both on the table at the same time. We have our A team at the desk, so you all would introduce yourself and go to work.
Well, you can go ahead. You're going to start. Well, we can do introductions. I'm Chair Greenlick. Members of the committee, my name is Tina Edlin. I'm the Deputy Administrator with the Office of Health Policy and Research.
We're going to let the person testify that it actually did the work, is that right? Or is the boss going to take credit?
I have done nothing.
Careful, you shouldn't
want to ask that question. Yes, everybody now, watch me and follow me. This is a cell phone. I'm pressing the button that turns it off. It would be nice if you all did the same thing. Because even silence interferes with our recording system.
Chair Greenlake and members of the committee, I'm Janine Smith, the Administrator for the Office of Health Policy and Research.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Tom Burns, Policy Consultant to Representative Greenlake.
I believe today what we were going to try to do is walk you through the bills that were created on behalf for the governor's recommended budget that reflect a lot of the aspects of the Health Fund Board's recommendations, which include, of course, House Bill 2009 that Tom will go into more detail about. But we wanted to start with looking at the other bills that are available for your consideration.
Talk into the mic a little
bit. And when she says,
are we getting sound?
So what we thought we would do is tag team a little bit today. And what I'll start with is a general description of the seven bills that the Health Fund Board considers part of their health reform package. Along with that, what you'll see, I think, in your packet or handed out to you was this document that summarizes the...
Excuse me just a minute. I'm hearing cell phones ringing in our recording system, so if you haven't turned it off, I wish you would. I'm also having a little trouble hearing.
Yeah.
Are you having trouble hearing?
I think they're calling to get the sound system.
Oh, is there a way to get that sound turned up a little? Is that, we have to get somebody? Thank you. In the meantime, could you try and speak up?
I can. Try and speak right into this. Can you hear now? Okay. Okay, I'll start again then. So what you see on this piece of paper is not only the seven bills that are considered part of the Health Fund Board package of bills that were originally drafted out of our office, but also the other bills that have come forward that are really very related and in alignment with the board recommendations. We consider this to be what we've come to refer to in the office as the health reform package of bills. So we tend to refer to them as a package that really go together towards health reform in the state. So the first one that you see on this list, and I won't go through the ones that you'll be talking about obviously later in this committee too much except to just mention them here as part of this package of bills. Obviously the first one is House Bill 2009, the Health Authority, which provides the infrastructure under which all of these other activities can take place. We see it as an integrator of state health policy and state health purchasing, and hopefully we'll work toward making the state a smart health purchaser. As you know, the board recommended coverage to bring everyone under the tent and to have coverage expansions that begin with expanding Medicaid for children. up to 300% of the poverty level, and for the to bring back the OHP standard program for adults up to 100% of poverty, and to do that through a provider tax, which is House Bill 2116. 2117 is the policy bill for healthy kids. I won't go into either of those. Then the last piece before I get into our set of our seven bills is support for public health and healthy communities. That was a really key piece of the Health Fund Board recommendations, and in the governor's recommended budget is $12 million that has a revenue source of the tobacco tax that's aimed at public health prevention and reduction of tobacco use, reduction of obesity and other major chronic diseases, and some local health system, public health system improvements. So those, that sort of sets the stage for what we think our seven bills exist within. That's the environment in which they exist. I'll let actually.
Are you going to work your way through that?
We are. What I want to do, Chair Greenlick, if it's your prerogative, obviously. But what we thought we would do is if we could give a very brief overview of our seven bills, then we can talk. We can go through the matrix that compares the Health Fund Board recommendations, House Bill 2009 addresses them, and then how each of our bills address them.
I think that would be great.
Okay.
And I think all seven bills have come to us, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Great. So we'll have them in some individual, some bundle, some other way to deal
mm-hmm.
with it. Thank you, Tina. Please
yeah,
go ahead.
Sure.
Sorry to interrupt.
That's okay. So the first one, Janine.
Oh,
excuse me, Simone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, I can wave more.
Yeah, when she runs off in a bit, it's not going to be anything you said. It's going to be because she has some more pressing issues, like how to cut the money out of this year, out of this biennium's budget.
I like this conversation much better. I had a question, and it's a budget question, actually, reference to House Bill 2122, and I have not looked at that yet, but that's the tobacco tax. One of the things that wasn't clear to me in the Health Fund Board report is there's a lot of talk about prevention and public health. Wanted to know if you have done or can share the calculations of the $12 million, and does that really meet capacity? You know, the local health officials have done a report looking at public health capacity. I'm like, where is that in the continuum of where we need to be, and how is that derived? And you might not have the answer to that question, but if we could get that info, that would be helpful.
Yeah. Okay. Chair Greenlick, Representative Kotek, members of the committee, I don't have right off the top of, we know that we've woefully underinvested in public health over time, and this is a start. It's not necessarily the end-all, be-all, ultimate, but it's a start of investing in public health. And it was really felt to be a strong component for the Health Fund Board's discussions that you can change the delivery systems inside a clinic, but if out, you know, they can't do it all. And it's really important that the community gets healthy as well and has opportunities too. So that this particular amount of investment would be towards primarily towards obesity, which has such rippling effects across all types of disease, and tobacco, so continuing some of the tobacco efforts. And public health could certainly give you more detail, and we can track down more of that perspective of what, you know, how does that start down the road of full and more complete investment in public health.
Representative Kotek, I've been meeting with Representative Barnhart, and our determination is we'll not take up tobacco tax in 2009. We'll pull that in the bill 2009, but rather we use 2122 as the vehicle for looking across at all the tobacco tax proposals we're getting for public health and for other kinds of issues, including transportation and things. So we'll have here a full discussion of 2122. I've asked Representative Barnett to tell us how far he wants us to carry that, what he wants us to do versus it goes on to revenue and ways and means out of here. So we may spend some significant time on it, or we may just move it quickly over to revenue, but that'll be, you might want to check in with him as well, because it'll get to you in ways and means.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I appreciate the clarification, because that is one of my concerns is, you know, there's a lot of talk in the Fund Board report about prevention and population health. The money that's being suggested, I don't think is an adequate investment. And so I'd like to see some, you know, numbers. What are our choices if we're, you know, if we're going to raise money on tobacco and we really are serious about improving population health? It goes beyond BC prevention, tobacco prevention. And we're going to need to see some of those numbers. So, and I know that's the baseline of where it started. It's good to know it's going to be a separate conversation, but it'd be nice to start thinking about those numbers now. So,
Thank you. So I just wanted to say one more thing before Janine is going to talk about the end of life care bill that the governor's filed on our behalf. There was $5 million put in the governor's recommended budget for this packet of bills that we are going to talk about now. So, and the numbers you see by each bill represent what we had included in our policy option package that sum up to that $5 million in general fund. That a portion of those funds are matchable through the Medicaid program, so the total is $7.6 million.
Okay. So House Bill 2132 is end-of-life, or it's more focused primarily on a PULSE registry, which is the Physician Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment. Again, this is a different entity than an advanced directive. It's a physician's signed orders that an emergency medical technician can respond to. So, and so they actually can follow the actual order that the physician has written. It doesn't take over for an advanced directive. All of us should certainly consider an advanced directive, but those such as, say, my elderly mother with multiple diseases should strongly consider having a PULSE. Many people living in assisted living and other sort of getting closer to their sunset years and have a lot of health issues may want
to... Be careful.
Your mother may not be happy with that.
How old is your mother?
She wouldn't want me to say. She'd just deny it violently and deduct 10 years. The registry, Dr. Susan Toll and the Center for Evidence for Ethics up at OHSU has been doing a pilot on this, and I know she wants to come down and explain it to you all in more detail. But the essence is that you could call and have a reliable resource in which these PULSE registries could be accessed for such circumstances, such as an emergency medical technician or an emergency room, so that wishes of the patient could be actually captured and unnecessary in the sense of not being requested by the patient, wouldn't want to have this done to me, would be related when the patient perhaps is not able to. So this had also some investment for the Health Services Commission, which looks at various decisions around the prioritized list, but could also work with commercial plans to come up with sort of an assessment of what are the best services that should be invested in for palliative care. Because through the course of the Health Fund Board, we had a significant amount of public testimony towards improving palliative care, which is also end-of-life care in terms of what can you do. You can't necessarily cure anyone, but you can make sure that you can make their life a little easier. And so what that encompasses can be a little bit of this or a lot, and so there was also a little bit in there, but the majority of the dollars in this package are for the PULSE registry itself.
We'll be kind of hearing that bill on the 4th.
On the 4th.
Fourth. Okay.
So the next series of bills I'm going to talk about are what we consider our cost containment bills. They provide the sort of the best next steps toward building an infrastructure where we can gain the savings that we'd like to save through delivery system improvement. The first one, and here's where there's a little bit of a disconnect because of the timing that was involved when we had to have our legislative concepts submitted. The authority was just they were just beginning to talk about the idea of a health authority within the board. So when we submitted this bill, it really speaks to continuation of the board rather than an authority. So if you just think about it as fitting within the authority, it probably will make more sense. This bill contains the activities to continue some of the activities that were outlined in 329, Senate Bill 329, that we didn't have a chance to really address fully in the 14 months we had developing the health fund board recommendations. Number one, it's to develop a full work plan, business plan, basically, for a health insurance exchange, to establish a committee to look at tort reform, medical liability and tort reform, and to really examine payment reform and put that group together to do a fuller, well, we didn't get a chance to really do more than it's sort of a review of the literature within the 329 process. The keystone piece of this bill is the development of an all-payer, all-claims database for the state so that we can finally look at health care utilization and costs statewide and look at variations in care across the state and hopefully understand them a little better than we currently do. Right now, many of you may be aware, the Quality Corporation is sort of a voluntary effort to develop, to collect some claims data and to do the work of feeding that data back to physicians and around quality improvement activities. That's not the vision for this effort, is to share this data with the Quality Corp so that it can continue that good work, but that we would also be able to look at area-wide population-based data and not do the clinical quality improvement piece. I'll hand this over to Janine for House Bill 2129.
And this one is clinical improvement assessment project, which builds on existing structures. It gives a little added support to the efforts currently going on in the Medicaid program under the Health Services Commission, which does the clinical guidelines for Medicaid, and the Health Resources Commission, which does the evidence-based prescription drug reviews and medical technology reviews. And it's trying to take this out to work with others in the community, other plans, to see if we could come together on some common agreement on what those clinical guidelines should be. Minnesota has been doing this for 15 years, and they work with 54 medical groups and 6 health plans, and they've all agreed that they're all going to use the same clinical guidelines. So me, as a physician in an office, I don't have to like think, okay, is Regents going to want me to do it this way, and somebody else wants me to do it this way, for what's the next best test I should order for this. And how it also helps to filter out and spread out to the community of providers what's the best evidence that they should be considering and using, because things change and a lot of us get into old habits of practicing the way we were trained, and so this is a way to try to further that. So it's just an initial first best step. It doesn't take us all the way to the full thing that's going on in Minnesota called the Institute for Clinical Systems Improvement, but it's the first next best step. It's not a great deal of dollars, but it's really just to get some added support staff and some consulting expertise to try to do this on a broader scale so that, say, PEB can maybe make sure that their network that they're purchasing through their commercial plans are using similar clinical guidelines that we are purchasing inside our Medicaid programs and our Medicaid plans.
Excuse me, or something more?
Yeah, thank you. This may be jumping ahead, but 3097, which is an acronym, but the Integrated Health Home Fund that we passed in February, were those two projects ever funded?
Representative Maurer and Chair Greenlich, I believe that they're in the process of evaluating who was going to be granted those, and I'm not sure I've seen exactly who, but we can find out for you.
And did the funding disappear? I mean, is in this whole...
Still there now.
You know, have we gone over the cliff? Is that...
Again, I need to double check on those. Those were for like specific integrated health home pilots. Separate than this. My understanding is they had worked with the Northwest Health Foundation to do an to figure out what the standards would be in terms of selecting the pilot sites.
I thought they were supposed to be funded in November, and I haven't heard.
Yeah, and I need to check back and get back to you.
Representative Cotet?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a really important piece to have in there. And when you mentioned PEB, and I know you're on the PEB board as well, wondering if we could actually fund some of this maybe inside of PEB as a starting point. You know, there are some things we already know work. Many of us saw the article the other day about the surgery checklist and what kind of results that's having in terms of quality of care in hospitals. So maybe we could talk about the PEB angle offline some other time.
Representative Kotek, Chair Greenlee, certainly, I mean, I think this is just a first step at even coming to some common consensus around it, which is important before anybody started to really, like, drive it and have it happen. But then how do you get that out to the clinicians and through the via the health plans themselves, or how best to do that? So there is a lot of work that could be done here, yes. And it's certainly something PEB would fit into their vision of what they'd like to see happen.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. House Bill 2130, Improved Transparency in Healthcare Reporting. This bill is aimed at improving healthcare facility reporting as well as health plan reporting or financial reporting. The key piece of this that many people have already heard about is that what it would require is that for the administrative cost portion of a healthcare premium for regulated health insurers, to the extent that that part of the premium is above the consumer price index, a health plan would be required to defend that. Rather than right now, they tend to increase with premium, which means they're increasing at the medical cost index. So this tries to hold administrative costs to something that's closer to the consumer price index. Other than that, it is just sort of strengthening our ability to collect and report on financial data. If you want to go to...
Before I move on to the integrated health homes, in a timely manner, someone has given me a note that the two medical home / integrated health home pilots that you all did in February were funded at $250,000 each. Health Matters of Central Oregon was one of the recipients, and Lane County 100% Access was the other, and they were announced 2 weeks ago.
Excellent.
Good. Thank you very much. So I thought that was just going to disappear in the morass of hemorrhaging.
Of falling over the cliff.
It worked awfully hard to get down to those two. I graded down to those.
Thank you very much.
So House Bill 2131 is...
Ms. Robinson.
...also takes on about the integrated health homes. And the essence here is that it tries to get some common definition and really more focused on common metrics and measurements we could use in reforming our payments to drive the change towards improved health outcomes through primary care patient-centered, or as the health fund board called them, integrated health homes. So this isn't necessarily the same in terms of a pilot per se. It's really more trying to do some work around, so how are we all going to decide on what we want these integrated health homes to do? There is some attempts to try to do this now, in the sense that the safety net clinics are working together towards trying to get a grant that maybe could start a little of this to build on all the other great work that's been going on in the state, but it's trying to get all the stakeholders around the table to agree to a common set of metrics that could then be used to, again, could be used via PEB or DMAP in terms of how they reimburse. And it would also, the other essence of this is trying to work on learning collaboratives. There's a few of these going on now. When you ask somebody to be an integrated health home, it's not just that you hire one extra person and you do the same old thing. You kind of got to learn how to change how your processes are inside the office. How can you do it more efficiently and change how things happen? And so they've been, Care Oregon has sponsored some of these, as have the Federally Qualified Health Centers, to do it with their little pilots to learn from each other and let the front office staff learn from each other and how to make it work better, the back office staff how to make it, and the docs can share, and nurse practitioners and PAs how to do it differently. So it's got also a how to bring folks together. Again, it's a good role that we've talked about on the PEB board in terms of how we started to have these kind of conversations, and this really helps to drive it.
Okay. House Bill 2142 on maximizing electronic health record adoption. This came out of a set of recommendations by the Health Information Infrastructure Advisory Committee, HIAC, which was formed by executive order of the governor. They advised, they put together a series of recommendations to the Health Fund Board about really maximizing health record adoption in the state, which included looking at providing a system of grants for small rural practices in Oregon. However, given you know that we had this relatively small budget box to work within, what the final recommendations were was that the state could establish, bring a council together, establish standards by which it's sort of giving that seal of approval to a set of electronic health record systems, and also provide some consulting services to help with workflow. As anyone who's been in a physician's office, sometimes the challenge is not getting the box and the technology, but actually redesigning workflow within the office to use it effectively. This should work. I mean, what we hope is that this positions us, as everyone knows, the stimulus package that should be heading our way sometime soon has a real focus on HIT in it and health information technology, and that we hope that we're through these efforts we're well positioned to make the best use of those dollars. You want to do the next one? Oh, okay. 2143 is the Healthcare Workforce Initiative. This has a parallel bill. Senate Bill 11 is parallel to this out of Senator Morris's committee, interim committee. As many of you may know, we know very, very little about the physician workforce, particularly in the state. The nurses have a great system of data collection and understanding their workforce. Other professions, not health professions, aren't nearly as advanced as they are in those efforts. We don't know through the medical licensing data, we know how many physicians there are, but we have no idea where they practice, how much they practice, who they see. So this begins that effort to help us understand where those workforce needs are. So if there's any questions, then we can answer those, and then we could go on to the matrix.
Why don't you go on to the matrix?
Okay. You want to lead that, Tom?
That's the thing called legislative tracking for the Oregon Health Fund.
Looks like this.
Mr. Chair, members, Tom Burns. You have in front of you the document that has three columns in it. Still has three columns, right?
Yeah.
This changes daily. I'm never quite sure. Three columns.
Time stamp.
The left-hand column is the broad policy areas that the Health Fund Board had identified. The center column is 2009, and the right-hand column are the bills in the package that we just discussed. And so, for example, if you start with the authority, you know, the board asked that there be an authority established with the state government to implement all health care initiatives and monitor it and reform it. 2009 very definitely does that by creating a Oregon authority, and 2128 does it in a different perspective by continuing the board and leaving DHS as it currently is. So as you go through these things, you'll find where the various pieces fit in. And I'll give you another example of it. We talked about the Quality Care Institute that is currently in 2128, the governor's package. If you look at section 17 of 2009, you'll read
section 17. Are you talking about on this document?
No, I'm now talking about specifically to the bill. I just want to give an example.
Shame on you.
I know. I couldn't figure out where I left my phone.
Now we know.
Can we wander through this document in some systematic way?
Yeah, we'll come back. Let me just give you... I just want to use this as an example, if I might, Mr. Chair. Section 17 of 2009 simply states that there will be a health quality institute is created within the Oregon Health Authority. That's all it says. So in order to do that, you have to either put some flesh on it or assume the authority will go ahead and do it, and the flesh would be 2021-28. So you can meld them together or leave them individual. So let's go through this. Building blocks. Create the authority. We talked about the creation of the authority, how it was going to be done. 2009 has specific subcommittees created, specific goals created, specific areas of the authority, and then 2128 is the detail that would create that. If you go down the building blocks, bringing everybody under one tent, expand coverage for children in low income. That's done in 2009 by the expansion of the Medicaid program, which is back in sections 124 to 128 of 2009. 2117 is the administration's proposal of how to do that with the corresponding policy associated with it. Then also under there is all the reduced enrollment barriers, conduct targeted aggressive outreach, define and maintain the essential benefits, authorize and implement the financing for the coverage expansions. All those are in 2009 in the sections of 124 through 127. It has more policy in it than the administration has, which is why you see the terms no legislative language from the administration. Again, not that either one of them is mutually exclusive. You can fold them together and make them work.
It's sort of 209 provides the infrastructure and the skeleton,
right,
and leaves things more open, and the individual packages provide more detail.
Right. And your choice is obviously whether you want to meld them together in one vehicle or leave them as separate packages, with the understanding that 2009 is the framework and you have to hang on that framework, the various bits and pieces that are in the other nine bills.
And Chair Greenlicken, and the reason that you don't see specific language here around the essential benefits package or any of the matters concerned with the health insurance exchange is because there was a decision made to spend this biennium. That was the next step, developing the work plan for an exchange. So that's why it's not here.
Turning to the page, building block two, setting high standards, measure and report. Again, the all claims database that Janine talked about in 2128, we simply say there will be an all claims database, period. There's no more detail around it. Require the collection of data on race. The Quality Care Institute is in place. It's designed to do that, but the framework is in 2128. You can go on down there through all of those building blocks that the fund board had and see where 2009 worked in and what pieces of legislation correspond to it in the administration package. And we're still in building block. This is still building block two. You turn the page. Create a clinical assessment program. That is in 2009 done as part of the exchange, whereas 2129 creates it through the Health Resources Commission. Again, neither one of them is right or wrong. It was just simply a different way of attempting to get at the same goal and trying to interpret what the Health Fund Board's recommendation was. Let's see, is there anything else that should be highlighted here? You guys have to help me on this.
Mm-hmm.
Are you on page three?
Page three.
And I would just add that, you know, there's a lot of pieces in our, you know, 2130 and, you know, 2129. They're all little pieces. They're all tools for this health authority, fund board, whatever you decide to do to drive the oversee it. It's that they need some tools to do some stuff. And so we gave you some first next best steps to start with, realizing very limited resources in that $5 million package.
So. Oh, that is a good point, that all those bills combined have a $5 million mm-hmm. fiscal. We'll get individual fiscals for them.
That's what's on your page,
on page
that we gave you, and there are detailed fiscals.
Mr. Chair, is that the governor's evaluation of how much it's going to cost?
That's in the governor's estimate? Recommended budget.
Okay, so it's not an LFO evaluation.
Correct.
We'll get those, I
guess.
We'll
get those.
The fiscals are on this page.
Which page? Of which?
In that first document that Tina took us to. This guy?
Yeah, those are fiscal.
Yeah, I don't have those pages. Do I?
Yes, you do.
That's right there.
There we go.
Right? Isn't that what you're
Correct.
Talking about?
Next to each one.
My vice
on
chair
one
not
page.
Only was not helpful, he stole my page. Could we go up three boxes? Just as an example, the one that says ensure all providers and payers adopt state standards was in the right. That was in the report. It's in 209 in that language, and then it's in 2142.
Which page
in that
you
same
on?
Language. I'm on page 3, the page you were on.
I got to page 3.
Three boxes from the bottom.
Right.
1, 3. Called ensure all providers. I assume 2142, as we look at it, has more in it than that. But
that's the health information technology, trying
right.
to get the purchasing collaborative for the smaller groups, and then setting some sort of common standards that everyone would use.
But that language came right out of the Health Fund Board report in all
right.
places. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Tom. Go ahead, please.
No, that's quite. So over on page 4, we go to the building block for unifying purchasing power. This is designed to use the power of the state to get better rates for the purchase of health care. And it's designed, the first one is to develop and implement a uniform contracting standard so that PEB and OEP and Medicaid and everybody, OPDP, all have the same contracting programs. We just simply say in 2009 to authorize the authority to develop and implement it. 2130 allows the director of DCBS to establish it. So it's the same thing. The only question is, who does it? The authority or DCBS? Convene public employers to implement a purchasing strategy. Again, the same language. I thought you had that, don't you?
I believe we have, like, where we encourage the, as we get clinical common standards, that then we would encourage, around the table would be those same, the multiple public payers. So,
right.
But it doesn't have a directive or a particular funding for a council of public government.
Right. Yeah, 2009 specifically creates a council within the board to specifically bring together all of the various players on the state level and bring them to the table to start the process.
And again, that would probably be, it isn't specifically called out in our initial bills, but again, a lot of these, some of these concepts were more fully fleshed out by the end of the Health Fund Board process, and we had to submit our legislative concepts back in April and May. So that's why the health authority isn't quite as big and other things, is because we had a point in time that we had to put in some best guesses where they'd
Give
land.
You some more. Representative Harker?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize, but a point of clarification. You gave the example of Section 17 early on, and it provided the structural framework,
right.
And I've already forgotten which number added the details. I think it was 2128.
Yes,
in that particular example. In every case, every row that we're looking at in this document is the structure provided in by 2009 and the necessary fleshing out provided by that in 2120X or 2130X in every case?
No, Representative Harker, Mr. Chair. If you, for example, look on page 4, convene public employees to implement purchasing strategies to improve the value of health care purchased. That was the board. That's the second bullet under building block number 3.
I see it.
Okay. 2009 has that same language in it. There is no corresponding bill to do exactly that in the package of bills that Janine and Tina talked about.
And furthermore, 2009 could stand on its own.
Yes.
It is designed to stand all on its own. These individuals, the extent to which we pass them, expand and create a more specific recommendation for how to do it.
Right.
With some cost estimates that go with it.
In every case?
In every, yeah. 2009 was designed to be completely standalone. The governor bill were also designed to be any or all of them as a package. The only one that I think is unnecessary, it is absolutely necessary, is if 2009 doesn't pass, then it's necessary to extend the health fund board if we want to keep the word going. If we want to keep the work going. Those are the only two absolutes. And then the rest is one from column A, one from column B. Although we give a responsibility to the health authority or to the health fund board, perhaps without giving them the resources to be able to do what it is we told them to do. But that's not new in state government. It's a stone soup world.
Thank you.
Representative Cannon.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I would appreciate, as we go forward, that was helpful, and I would appreciate knowing on which lines, if any, we have a choice to, we have a binary choice to make. It would appear that there is at least one, namely the do we constitute a health authority or extend the Oregon Health Fund Board, where we're not going to do both.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We're doing one or the other. Right. If there are other places where we have to make,
I'm not sure there are.
Where we are presented with that kind of choice, it would be helpful to know.
Representative Cannon and Mr. Chair, I can't think of anything else in the package of all the bills that there is a conflict.
Okay.
Everything else is you can take A or B or A and B. But that's the one you've identified, the one where there is clearly conflict.
Right. And it's not the entirety of 2128. It's just a portion of 2128 that's redundant because the all-payer, all-claims database is in that one as well, and that's a massive tool to do a lot of the other things.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay, it's important, I think, for me to highlight something.
Let's get in any time.
Mr. Chair,
And I guess the only other thing that Tina is pointing out is that I guess it's also exactly who does it. If you, for instance, the comparative effectiveness, we just built on current existing structures, the Health Resources Commission and the Health Services Commission to be the lead, versus his bill has an exchange board. So if you never create an...
Not his bill. It's the Health Fund Board.
His work for you.
His version of the Health Fund.
His
That actually, I think 209 is closer to the Health Fund Board report than the governor's bill, right?
And again, it's from a funding perspective of what it would take to fund a huger, larger entity to do that. Mm-hmm. Same with the Quality Institute. There's the full package in our, if you look at we can get you the Quality Institute work group, a full fleshed out Quality Institute could cost $2 million. We knew that wasn't probably feasible at this era. So, but these are some steps towards that fuller picture.
That's right. I think it's good to reinforce what Dr. Smith said before, and it's that this package was crafted so it could fit into the governor's proposed budget, which was a tight budget and a problem to begin with. So there were choices made in the crafting of this set of bills because each of them, in terms of the rules of the game, had to be submitted inside the governor's proposed budget. Now, the fact is the governor's proposed budget is whatever it was, so in a sense we're really starting over. I mean, for example, the pulse thing as we consider it, even if this estimate is the right estimate, we'll have $1 million total fund price tag on it, and we'll have to make some priorities under the rules we've been given as to whether that's the way we want to spend $1 million or we want to spend it some other way. So we've been charged by the Ways and Means Committee to make some of these tough priorities and not send everything over to Ways and Means to die. The offsetting side of that is that when we send some priorities over, they'll be taken pretty seriously by the Ways and Means Committee. So in the old days, when the process was you take the governor's budget and you make some changes plus or minus to the governor's budget, the fact that it was in the governor's budget took away the fiscal. We're not in that game this year, so these fiscals are all independent fiscals. But that did constrain you in your design by that. That's yes, Representative Denbro.
Mr. Chair, thanks. In terms of the work plan for the committee, so will our lengthier discussion of the exchange then come when we discuss 2009?
Yes.
And that's when we'll have the detailed explanation and discussion of it?
Well, we'll have as much detailed explanation as it requires for 2009, which really charges the commission to do the work between now and the 2011 session to create the exchange. So we won't have the fine details as if their plan was to implement the exchange between now and 2011. What we're charging them with is do the work to bring the exchange in its full detail with a yes or no for an individual mandate and all those other things to get to us. I think that's...
Right.
Yeah, so we will talk about what it is we're charging them with, but we won't have an ultimate debate on the details of it because that will be in 2011.
Thank you.
At least I think that's right. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, looking at the comparison between 2009 and the governor's bill, if we find ourselves in a position that we can't fund 2009 because of fiscal problems, is there another route open that we could fund some of the governor's bills and move toward 2009 in a stepwise fashion? You understand what I'm getting at?
2009, not counting the Medicaid expansion, mm-hmm. but the bones of 2009 should end up with, I don't know this is true, but should end up with a smaller fiscal than the package of governor's
okay.
bills, because basically it will be the transition costs of moving things from where they are to where they need to go. We're not putting in place any new governmental structures.
Okay.
So it's fiscal, who knows?
Yeah.
But we won't know until we hear. But my guess is it's fiscal, except for the Medicaid expansion, should be, I think, less than the full package of the governor's bills. I don't know that. You have a guess on that? You've had a chance to look at it.
Chair Greenlake, we haven't yet fully digested all of the 500 pages of the bill.
Well, and we haven't also decided which. I mean, there are still things that are very much at issue. We had an interesting discussion, and we'll get testimony with DCBS on the question of moving the health insurance regulatory functions. I mean, I think we won't get a fiscal until we've really acted on this. This is teeing up what we viewed the health fund board report, and it's likely before we're done, we'll change what's in 2009. And I don't think we're going to get a fiscal till we've honed this some.
Yes, sir.
Now I'm confused because I thought
I hope so.
2009.
That was my intention.
Thank you. 2009 does create a new bureaucracy or agency. I mean, I think ultimately that's what it does. Peel stuff out, but it creates this new entity, the Oregon Health Authority. But that's not really my question. My question has to do with the governor's
actually,
bills.
The simple answer is it really splits DHS. There's some other pieces, but its major thing is it splits DHS into two pieces.
Okay. In dealing with 2009, anything that we could roll into 2009, I think, would simplify the process. Because there, when you say fiscal, a lot of it is new revenue. I mean, there's going to be new avenues for getting revenue. So, you know,
that's
whether
right.
it was the POLST, the POLST, the, you know, some of these others, it just seems logical that you wouldn't deal with them individually unless you thought 2009 wasn't going to go anywhere. But to roll these into the 2009 bill, because the relating clause is so huge, we can drive a D9 cat through it.
I would say as an operating rule, I would oppose adding anything to 2009 that brought a fiscal with it that didn't need to be added in order to make 2009 work. So I think the last thing we want to do is turn 2009 into a Christmas tree with huge fiscal implications. So it was intended to try and restrict the fiscal. I mean, if for example, all we did do, and it's almost all we did, is divide DHS into two pieces. There'll be some fiscal for doing that. You know, you need to look at the management structure and whatever it is, but that fiscal won't include the specifics for doing these things. For example, it wouldn't put in place a pulse registry. We had the pulse registry in 2009. We've added $1 million to the fiscal. I would resist doing that in the 2009 deliberation, because I think you can add a pulse registry or you cannot add a pulse registry. That's a that's a decision we can make.
Because that's an issue, is whether this is going to become a Christmas tree.
I absolutely do not want it to become a Christmas tree. Maybe a used Christmas tree with last year's ornaments on it.
A Charlie Brown
but,
Christmas tree.
But not a nice, big, new, bright Christmas tree.
Well,
I don't have a lot of experience with Christmas trees, I have to admit.
Okay.
Hanukkah bush.
It's Oregon, you know.
Yeah, I know. It says green things, right?
Yeah.
It's green. I'm more used to some candles and a thing around that time of year. Yes, Tom, go ahead.
You want
Mr. Chair, members.
That's right. I want the oil of the last 8 days.
Continuing down on page 4, about the fourth bullet is the OPDP program. Right now, that program is not mandatory for local governments. 2009 does make it mandatory. That's in Section 50 of the bill.
I think we're having an interesting hearing on that one.
Creating the insurance exchange is in Section 17 of the bill, which Representative Dempro, if you look at, has ideas. The goal is to have the authority and the exchange work together and come back to you in 2011 if necessary for authority to move forward. There is language in 2009 to evaluate a publicly owned health plan option. Again, would be have to come back to you for authority to do that. The next two are broad categories having to do with how the insurance division looks at the administration ratio, administrative expense ratio of the plans and the and reports. We have broad language in 2009. There's more detailed language in 2130 to do that.
I'm sorry, Tom. I mean, that's an example of something that isn't necessarily, it's just expanding the language. You know, I don't know. Have you had a thought, Mr. Chair? You don't have a thought, have it? I don't want to create
an annoyance. I put some thought into each of these items as we put it in. But in lots of the cases, it was simply, let's put in what it says in the health fund board, and then we'll debate it here. There are the occasional ones when I thought, wouldn't it be fun to add this to it? And I did.
And we were.
Yeah. I expect we'll have interesting hearings on those pieces, too.
Yes.
Turning to the page, the top of page 5, the board suggested that legislation be proposed to authorize the state to regulate the annual increases of rates. 2009 has language that says that the rates can increase by medical CPI minus 1, and then 2130 just talks about the administrative side of the insurers.
And changes in contracted prices from year to year would be reported.
Mm-hmm. Then we get into the stimulate the system and innovation improvement, which is one of the building blocks, the major building blocks that the fund board had. The first one is creating the integrated health home, which we talked about. There is wording in 2009, but the real detail is over in 2131, which does far more detail than you'll find in 2009. Going on down, establish the standards for the home, integrated health home, developing standard requirements for contracting, incorporated and into the Oregon Health Plan, institute payment restructuring to support it, are all detailed in 2130. In 2009, they are simply under the one broad category that's listed there, Section 18 of the bill.
Yeah,
sort of the integrated health home continues. I think we ought to point out that the board did ask for a higher alcohol tax, and neither 2009 nor any of the administration plans has any language around the increase in the alcohol tax. The next one is to restructure the way to the payment system so that patients can get clinical care in more than one location. Again, no language. Did we talk about 156, Senate Bill 156, in your presentation? So you're going to have to do this one then.
Go ahead.
Actually, we have just started to look at Senate Bill 156, so I don't think I can provide you on details, but I believe this is just a directive to further integrate behavioral health and physical health care more than is currently being done.
Yeah, there's some real interest in moving that.
Which was a interest of the Health Fund Board, and they definitely had efforts towards that. We see some of that in our set of bills was more the integrated health home, where we called it an integrated health home because we knew it couldn't always be a physical health clinic, but it might be a mental health clinic that has a physical health consultant come in. So it's sort of an integration onto itself. But we didn't, again, it was early on, and that full idea hadn't been fleshed out.
And 2009 does not have anything around that. 2009 does establish the Payment Reform Council, as does 2128. The next one, Representative Maurer, is your issue. This was a specific request by the Fund Board to help avoid some antitrust problems as people tried to work through creating the exchange and creating this program. We have specific language in 2009, and there is no real corresponding language in any of your bills.
And that is really just a matter, again, of the issues emerging fairly late in the Health Fund Board process, that the issue of the need for safe harbor language came up fairly late, and that's the only reason you don't see it reflected in any of our bills.
Can we talk about that safe harbor language, and can we as a state do things that shield people from federal antitrust, or is it?
Chair Greenlick, I don't know the answer to that.
Okay, we'll get some discussion there. But the function of it was to allow health plans to come together with the authority to talk about how to regulate the market for health insurance,
right.
I assume is what we were talking about here.
I would just want to add that just a correction when it comes down to talking about community-based collaboration. There is a little bit of money in 2131 around around the integrated health homes about that could go out to communities such as examples similar to 100% access efforts in Lane County and Central Oregon. It isn't a lot of money, again, because we were within the restraints of that $5 million budget box, but there is a little bit of seed grant dollars in there for community collaboratives that didn't get captured on this document on page 6.
Right. And if you go back up, you see the Pulse on there, which we talked about, but again, that was a Fund Board recommendation. There's nothing in 2009, and 3132 is a standalone Pulse bill. Turning the page over to page 7. Okay, I'm now in trouble here. This is... The second one is to define the accountable health communities across the state. The authority would include this within the OPR and the new Quality of Care Institute. And the administration has it in a couple bills, 2128 and 2130.
And just to clarify for those who aren't familiar, the accountable health communities was a concept that the delivery committee of the Health Fund Board looked at. It's work that's being done in Vermont, who are doing extensive health reform, where they're with their much improved collection of, they have a great database that they can do this with. And Elliot Fisher and the folks at the Dartmouth Atlas, folks who look at how we're utilizing our resources, are going to do this in 6 or 7 communities where they can kind of map out
what are we purchasing, what's the cost, what's the quality, and be able to get on a population basis around this. We have some consulting dollars with Elliott, hoping maybe to do that with Elliott Fisher here in Oregon, and that was what was in 2128. So to fulfill this really interesting concept of how you could figure out where to target your next best investment and how much is, and also an alternative when you think about the issues around certificate of need, which a lot of times controls building costs. And a lot of times the technology is escalating inside those buildings, and so this is a way to kind of get a better snapshot and picture of it, and it's sort of a way to still do kind of what you want to intend to do in certificate of need, but doesn't really, based on the literature review, doesn't really capture it with certificate of need.
We don't have any sworn oath from testifying here, but did I hear you testify that certificate of need actually saves money in building?
Representative Chair Green, like I did not say, I said the literature does not support finding,
support.
And that. But the approach here through the accountable health communities was an alternative way to try to get to the same end result of controlling costs and focusing on value purchasing.
Thank you.
The second box is from the bottom, are the tobacco and alcohol beverages. And again, there are no alcohol beverage taxes in either bill, but the tobacco piece is currently in 2009 in sections 149, and then it's in 2122 as well. No employee wellness action program in either proposal?
It is going to come out of 2009.
Right. There is the fund board, skipping a couple of these and coming down to the third one. The fund board was pretty strong, that felt pretty strong there needed to be a medical liability reform council or something to address that. There is no language in 2009 around that issue, and 2128 does have that as a continued subcommittee of the fund board. Technology Oversight Council, the authority will investigate and report, and 2142 goes beyond that and establishes it. I guess most of the rest of these are still the technology goals on this page. Mm-hmm. So that's all technology goals on that page. And looks like all the next page are the technology goals. And again, nothing in 2009 and 2142 is the operative. Health equity for all is the next major building block that the board looked at. This is finding ways to promote population-based approaches for substantial increase in public health activities. Again, 2009 does have a piece in there funded by the tobacco tax, but that's coming out, and the debate will be in 2122. The top of page 10 has the I don't know what that one is. This is a more integrated health home.
Where are you?
10?
Yeah. This might be a duplicate
that
I had before.
We're finding.
But I think the essence here is that the Health Fund Board felt that to get at health inequities, we sort of need to do this across the board. So when we're looking at how to set common metrics for an integrated health home, we should make sure that it includes how to get care to be more equitably distributed to all races and ethnicity groups, and geographically challenged as well. So it was again a lot of this section of the Health Fund Board was that we needed to be sure we thought about how to get towards health equity in a lot of these measures. So when data is collected, are we getting all the information we know so that when we're looking at it on a population basis, are we seeing if there's disparities amongst care being delivered to certain populations? Population groups? Are we making sure we're paying for care that makes sure is equally distributed across population groups?
Second from the bottom on page 10 is the Workforce Institute. Why does it say no language? You have a workforce in bill.
This could be a typographical error.
Not that we ever make typographical errors on 12-page documents.
Yes, actually, the Health Force Workforce Council, We actually, I think our bill, which is 2143, has collecting of information and not necessarily sets up a specific council, but that the information would come back to the either fund board or an authority to help make those decisions.
Glenn Cannon?
Thanks. I'm sorry to take you back just a step, but I'm looking at the top row on page 10. Could you say a little bit more about that? You sort of introduced this by talking about health equity. It looked to me like there may be more that this the intention of this top row has to do with delivery system reform, integrated health homes.
Right.
Say more about what the health fund board had in mind here.
I think
what
the health fund board was Representative Cannon, Chair Greenlake, is that a lot of times we're like, okay, we want to change and to have an integrated health home, and we all want to do this, but then sometimes we forget about health inequities. And so how can we make sure that while we're doing anything, we're thinking about how to make sure care is delivered to all population groups. And so it may be one of the criteria to be a health home is that you make sure that translation services are adequately provided, that there's awareness and sensitivity training going on in the health home to make sure that all population groups are not disadvantaged there, that the clinical guidelines take into account perhaps some differences in care. The community initiatives would be focused, obesity prevention, other types of things would make sure they target differing populations who may be disadvantaged to getting that. Does that clear that up a little bit?
And just to follow up, I think that I'm especially interested in the what 2009 does. Just from reading that paragraph, and I'm looking for it in the bill, it sounds like it may be when you start talking about uniform quality performance measures, we could have something quite different in mind than simply ensuring that we're establishing these on an equitable basis.
I'm not sure it's appropriate to have the exchange reference there. I think that if you look, go back and look at the exchange language, you could draw some inference that, in fact, it might be community-based and health-focused, but if you read Section 18, I'm not sure it really dovetails with exactly the policy that was over that is detailed on the left-hand column.
Okay, I'll read Section 18.
Yeah,
but I'd like to follow on that question, and that's there's no question we need to be working toward delivery system reform, and the question where are the pieces here that I think there are some pieces that talk about moving toward delivery system reform, right?
They were on the previous section when we talked about delivery system reform.
Right.
This section was more trying to make sure are we addressing health inequities and working through health equities, and then there's a multitude of places that you can do that. It was a challenge in the health fund board process as to how do we do this. We really wanted it to come out and be seen that, because there was a lot of work done around what the issues are. And so we pulled it out into one whole chapter in the report, but it really crosswalked across all the other building blocks. I mean, you need to do something in how you collect the data. There's something in how you deliver the care. It's, you know, making sure that the streamlining of how people get enrolled. I mean,
just a comment, Mr. Chair. What's intriguing to me about the summary of Section 18 in this top row is the possibility that contract standards would be used to try to drive some of this delivery system reform. For instance, the development of integrated health homes and doing so on an equitable basis. And I'll have to read, or you can summarize Section 18 to give me a sense of whether that is the that is included in House Bill 2009. I didn't see it that using contracts to help drive delivery system, or state contracts to help drive delivery system reform. I hadn't seen that in the previous rows of this document.
And that was the intent of the board, and in our bills, we were thinking of that. You know, you got to set some common measurements that you want then to go into the contract, or you want to have everyone submitting the information the same way and put that in the contract. And whether for all things to improve quality of care, not necessarily just from an equities perspective.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cannon, develop uniform contracting standards for the purchase of health care by state agencies, including uniform quality performance measures, evidence-based guidelines for major chronic diseases, health care services, and unexplained variations in frequency or cost, and comparative effectiveness guidelines for select new technologies.
That's proposals for the exchange.
Right? That's proposals for the exchange.
That the exchange
right.
should do.
As yeah, yeah. It's the bottom of page 8, top of page 9 of uh-huh. 2009.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
Just further on the integrated health homes. In the human services this morning, we were discussing long-term at-home care and the role of home health workers. And has there been discussion of the role of the home health care deliverers in the integrated health home, you know, for seniors and people with disabilities, and also those who are working in foster care, adult foster care? How are they... What is the vision for bringing them into the communication network, and would that be part of the contracts?
Representative Denbrough and Chair Greenlake, the Health Fund Board focused primarily on sort of the acute care side and less on long-term care, but in the vision of what an integrated health home or a medical home would do is care coordination. So if you have a patient that uses that clinic or office as the integrated health home, there would need to be close communication, and that would be what we'd want to reinforce in the clinic setting, that they are care coordinating with those home caregivers or the folks that are doing the in-home care. There were some frequent references that an integrated health home meant we were putting everyone in a home, and that's not true. Right. But it really was more a home. It comes from the pediatric literature, and it was like a place that you felt like you had a good relationship with. But the relationship needs to be with those people who go to that person's actual home. And the models you see across the country and other states and in Oregon is trying to coordinate the care coordinators in many ways.
Right.
I think the key is that it's a team-oriented approach, so you make full advantage of the whole team of caregivers.
Thank you.
Get Mr. Riggs to come in and talk to you about the primary care home until it comes out of your ears. Right? incidentally, Representative Denbrough, we made in the drafting of 2009 a critical decision, which was to leave nursing homes and home and community-based long-term care services in DHS. That may be something that we want to discuss, and I know DHS is interested in discussing it with us, the extent to which you want to leave it, but I haven't seen compelling interest in the first round. I think we've bitten off a pretty big chunk here, but that is the interface between the two sides, and I spent about 30 years of my life trying to integrate home and community-based long-term care with acute medical care, and it pained me a little bit to leave them apart, but and we will discuss it again, but it does add a level of complexity to move it over. Other questions? Keep moving.
So I think we've progressed on to page 11, building block 6, training a new healthcare workforce. And again, other than creating a workforce council under the authority, 2009 is silent, and 2143 and 2131 go through and address other workforce needs, as Janine and Tina previously outlined.
Just out of curiosity, is that train a new healthcare workforce was that's Health Fund Board language.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the assuming that everybody else is going to leave and we're going to have to
retirement.
Reinvent the
retirement.
Representative Maurer, Chair Greenlake, I think the assumption was that with the number of the workforce surveys that we do show a large number of professionals getting ready to retire, and I think that was the driving notion there.
The next major building block that the fund board addressed was the advocating for federal changes, and I think we all have a pretty good sense that the world in D.C. is changing rapidly around us. 2009 simply says that the authority can go to try and seek federal changes in order to implement this bill or other things would help. And 2128 gives that same authority to the board, the existing board. And again, that's back to that sort of fundamental question, or do you have the existing board or do you create the authority? Mm-hmm. The rest of it just sort of falls out through there of giving the authority, giving authority to somebody to go off and try and get the federal government to help us out in our process. So, Mr. Chair, at that point, that is the matrix that sort of identifies these. We did not touch on provider taxes, but as you know, that is in the bill in sections about 129 through 146, and we can talk about those at any time if you would like to.
Is there anything else in, you want to run quickly through the bill through your index? I mean, I urge you all to pay attention to this untitled thing, which is basically the table of contents to the bill. In fact, I would suggest some of you use this table of contents to create a bill by tearing out all those things that are called conforming amendments. I haven't done that exercise yet. I expect to. My guess is the bill comes down to about 30 pages, is that?
About that, yes, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be easier for you to deal with it there. And
50 pages.
Is that what it is? Have you done that? Is that about what it comes to? It's a lot easier than 264 pages, anyway. But this is intended to be an index so you can see where things are in the bill as we discuss it, and we'll, when we announce something, we'll try and announce it in terms of which sections we're considering and then which are the conforming amendments that go with those sections. We have that on the Monday agenda, for example, for dealing with the issue of the formation of the authority. You've seen the Monday agenda, and we're talking about which sections here we're going to be referring to and which are the conforming amendment sections that go with that.
Mr. Chair, I'll be happy to go through the index. I think that we've basically talked about all these things, but what you have in front of you index in the first column is the section in the bill. The second column is sort of the broad subject area. The third column is the current law section that is affected by the bill. The fourth column is the page on the bill where that section is. And the fifth column is the discussion about what that section does. And as you can see, sections 1 through 10 all have to do with the board, the creation of the board, how the board is appointed, the authority of the board, with sections 8 and section 10 as really being the operative sections that you want to really focus on for the authority of the board and what the board will do and what the board will look like. Then section 11, which is page 6 of the bill, starts with the creation of the health authority. And section 11 is really the meat of that, with the rest of the sections are almost the placeholders, if you want to, for the where you can plug various pieces of the administration package into it or leave them standalone. The authority, sort of the new work for the existing authority, I think I have this made backwards. No, but I don't. Section 20 is the section that actually takes the DHS and DCBS and tries to carve it out in a policy statement. And then the conforming sections for that start on section 28 of the bill and run back through sections 124. So sections 28 through 124 are all sort of conforming language, moving things into the authority. Section 124...
Clarify that in case some of you that have only been around a little bit. For example, any time there's any mention of anything in a statute that's going to change, for example, the Public Health Division is referred to in a variety of statutes as being in DHS. That means the whole statute needs to be reprinted in the bill, and the only change we'll show DHS deleted, and Oregon Health Authority. There's about 100 sections or 150 sections in here that literally do nothing but that. So, I mean, they're in here and they confuse the issue. And in fact, we have another 150 sections to add to it before we're done that are nothing but that if we continue to keep these pieces in. The Ledge Council couldn't get it ready for us in that time, but we may or may not decide to do some of those things. And if we don't, we'll wait, and then we'll not have to add those to the bill by amendment as we go along. So that's what he's referring to here, is the conforming sections.
And then, Mr. Chairman, Section 124 starts with the expansion of the Medicaid program, and that's just how it's going to work. 128 is the $100 million for the increase in the provider rates. And then starting with Section 129, you have the taxes, beginning with the insurance tax, the managed care tax, the TPA tax, followed starting in Sections 137 with the hospital tax, and that continues to 146, it looks like. My eyes are getting tired here. When the tobacco tax starts through 157, and then starting with 158 to the end of the bill are all other conforming amendments. Generally, no, I can't even say that. They're just all conforming amendments, either DHS conforming amendments or DCBS conforming amendments. I'm pretty sure the accuracy is correct, but you will find the occasional misspelling and typo, and I've told that I called instead of PEB, it's PEB, and I apologize for that. That was a, you know, you're trapped in the house in the snow with a 13-year-old. That's when I did this.
Sounds like when I wrote my master's thesis when I was laid up for 2 weeks in a hospital bed with back problems and dictated it. It didn't have anything else in my mind.
Except
the pain. Okay, are there any other questions? I think we're going to get out of here early today. Thank you very much for being, well, not only for being here, but you guys have done extraordinary job. We've been depending on your office for a variety of things, and serving not only as staff to the fund board, but staff to everybody else in the world. It's been quite extraordinary, and Tom, you too have done quite the old person work on this one. That's really important. Monday we start hearings on this bill. We start public hearings. I would and it will be particularly, Madam Administrator, what sections are we beginning the discussion on? What have
20.
We posted?
Section 20, the creation of the,
essentially the development of the the Oregon Health Authority as an operating department, not the board and other things, but simply the creation of that as an operating department. We'll kick that off with testimony from Dr. Goldberg, the head of DHS, and I think Corey Streisinger, is that right? From DCBS to talk about it. Corey's done a very interesting memo for us that she'll testify on that talks about some of the consequences of moving the health insurance regulatory function or not from DCBS, and that should be very interesting process, and she'll be here to talk about it. We'll probably also have a report from John McConnell talking at some of the effects of some of the tax things. We're working on that right now, and we'll know better on Monday if that's going to happen, but I think you folks are working with him to see if we can make that happen, and we probably will have that on Monday. All of you should try, and the extent to which we'll be having lots of public testimony before we're done, but perhaps if you can organize it in some fashion so we can maybe sign up in three-person panels as a way it might facilitate how we can look at it and organize it. We promise we'll have lots of time for testimony, including a couple of evening sessions where we'll just have wide open public testimony, and a session in Representative Maurer's district in Grants Pass, where folks in Southern Oregon will have a chance to come in and talk to us about their perception on the bill. We're also working with Senator Manus Anderson in trying to create a regular pattern of joint meetings between the Senate Health Care Committee and our committee, and we're working with her committee to try and figure out how to do that, whether we can use 3 to 5 Friday afternoon as a regular joint time. Turns out Dr. Bates can't make it at that time if we do that, but maybe that, or maybe some evening sessions where we can hold joint. But we really want to make sure we're working closely in conjunction with this, our Senate colleagues on this. Again, it would be very useful to us if in your testimony you have specific proposals. Delete Section 26 and add this instead. Don't take them to LC and bother LC. We'll have so many of them. Bring it to us. We'll file them, and we'll put them before the committee, and we'll look at every one of those in some systematic way. So, and we'll start trying to figure out how to create a file of those so we know what's going on. So it's fine if you just say we're opposed to the whole bill. We recommend you go away, but we're fine with the bill, but don't tax you, don't tax me, tax the guy behind the tree. That works fine, too. But if you have specific ways to improve language or to improve pieces of it, it would be very useful if you give them to us in the sort of form you might give them to LC to ask for an amendment. So to give them to us by saying, change the language in Section 33 to this and in Section 34 to that. That kind of thing would be helpful. I promise you they'll all get looked at and all get consideration. Other comments from the committee?
Today was very helpful, Mr. Chair. Appreciate that.
Well, we'll try and keep. This is a big process.
Just a comment, yes, and I think that last chart that you handed out is very helpful. I've been trying to figure out how to get a handle on this, and reading it seems more confusing than enlightening, and I think this will help to understand where the substance is.
Yeah, it would take superhuman effort to start on page 1 and read to page 264.
Well, it seemed futile.
No disregard. But don't do that. I think this is not like a U.S. congressional bill. We're in the middle of the night, stuck in the middle of 42 conforming sections. There's some real substance. I think we're going to try and keep the substance where everybody can see it rather than trying to move it under the shells. You all have any last comments?
Not for me, no.
Okay, thank you very much.
We'll
close the hearing, and we'll adjourn. Well, the record note, it's 4:30 on Friday.
Yo, you have 9.